Welcome to episode 406 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's program, we feature a grand conversation with our resident politico, Dwayne Heisler. We discuss President Biden's executive orders, opportunity years, electing local officials, doing things so that you're not compulsively making things worse. Scarcity mentality, them and me, among other things. A grand conversation with Dwayne Heisler this week. We share some compelling statistics, real, true statistics, as compiled and published by Harper's Magazine for their September 2020 edition. We have an EW essay titled Ancient Flow and a poem called Goddess. All of this will be imbued and infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to have you with us. Let's get to it. Episode 406 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Woke up to the morning sky first, baby blue just like we rehearsed. When I get up off this ground, I shake leaves back down to the brown, 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 till I'm clean. Then the walk will I be shaded. I'm headed to town, 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 in style, with all my favorite colors.
Yes, sir.
All my favorite colors,
right.
My sisters and my brothers, see them like no other. All my favorite colors.
Oh,
ancient flow. I light a cone of incense purple and kick the Buddha in the head. Sunshine is bright yellow and helps me celebrate the feast for these eyes of a clear winter morning in my head. A blanket of snow on the ground of the mountainside across the way. At the foot flows a creek whose persistence is ancient and so very important to the natural sway of these parts. Marquez is sleeping in his bed next to the radiator, mumbling inside his dreams. My love of this moment inspires happiness, which in turn strengthens the seams of these seemingly routine scenes of one person's existence on a planet, perhaps not alone, in the galaxy it calls home. My son asked me about the moon and how we can still see it in the daytime. It was full this morning, just hanging there still in the western sky, superb and sublime. We talked about a day on this earth as we revolve on our axis and also work our way around the sun star with that wondrous moon in tow. And again, in this moment, I feel free and poignant, reflecting on all and nothing simultaneously, realizing almost clear what there is to know. Dwayne Heisler, is that you?
Yes, this is Dwayne Heisler. Good to see you, sort of.
Yeah, I can picture you. Thanks for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours yet again. A member of the Executive Committee and Chair of the PA State Democratic Committee. Campaign Coordinator for SEIU Healthcare PA. And that's a union. He's a union man, Dwayne is.
That's right.
And he's also on several leadership teams of organizations, progressive organizations, I should say, in NEPA. He's a progressive, he's a union man, and he's our resident politico, Dwayne Heisler. So nice to have you on the program, sir.
So glad to be here, shouting out from Northeast PA, NEPA. Boy, have we been busy.
You mean since the election of President Biden and the new Senate and all that?
Well, yes. And, you know, it's funny because I have colleagues and friends, mostly friends, who will say, boy, you must be relieved. Like, well, you must have a lot of free time on your hands right now. And how is that? And no, you know, the work never ends, and nor should it, because we're always trying to push for, you know, these things called human rights all the time. And so that work never ends. It's nice to be able to occasionally take a step back or step forward, which you need to do or else you'll burn out. But if anything, after the election, the work got even more intense, you know, leading up to what happened on January 6th with the
insurrection.
The insurrection, the attempt to take over our country, you know, that, all of that. But then there's also the inauguration and things building up to that. And then there was day one of Biden's administration, which was exciting, too.
Oh, very exciting. It's nice to have a real, you know, thinker and a seasoned politician in the best sense of the word, and just a decent human being in the White House.
What is that? Like, I'd almost forgotten what that was. Honestly, it's, you know, the bar has been so low now, like, if you think about it. But something, you know, you made me think about it. Like, when people were saying, oh, you must be, like, well, this must be a relief. You know, the presidency was won. Although in Pennsylvania, a lot of the down ballots were either split or we actually lost some ground in our state legislature. And so there's a lot of kind of deep diving on that and why that happened and how we can avoid that to make sure that everyone votes the whole ticket and not just for the president. And that's why I like to call these years opportunity years.
These years before the midterm elections?
Yeah, these are opportunity years. These are the opportunity to actually elect people to our school boards, actually elect mayors and like local offices. And you know, when you think about it, gosh, these offices are the ones that determine everything from when your trash gets picked up to what's being taught to your child in school. Are there potholes on your street? You know, like, these directly affect how clean is the water we're drinking. I mean, it can get very serious too, very quickly. And you know, we often hear and I do a lot of work in the Latinx community too, that the only time we hear from you is when you want our vote, that kind of thing, right?
Right.
And the fact of the matter is that this work is continuing. These are important years. And so by calling them off years, it's terrible framing. It's like we have off. And then we wonder why people don't understand that there are two elections every year, the primary and the general. Every single year it happens. And so there's a lot of educational work that really needs to be done around what these opportunity years look like. And I'm certainly an opportunity voter. Like I take that opportunity to make sure I'm electing the local mayor, or that I'm making sure that we have the right people on the school board that's going to be helping to educate our youth and so forth. I just can't imagine. That's part of being a good citizen to me.
Right. You want to make sure that someone who is a supporter of QAnon is not on your school board or your state house or something.
You have an amazing ability to reduce to the ridiculous. Is there anyone out there? There probably is, but is there really anyone out there that wants conspiracy theory being taught at elementary schools? I mean, maybe there's a market for that. I don't know, but not with my public tax dollars. Hell no,
that's not gonna happen. No, it's unhealthy. You know, it's not that that false equivalency that we give. Well, everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a right to their point of view. No, no. If your point of view is crazy and based on lies and hate, no, you know we're not going to look at that as being equal to someone who is just trying to understand different points of view in a healthy sense that's rooted in fact, you know.
Yeah, what could go wrong, right? Like having that happen. But you know, it brings up an important point. So immediately after the election, I would say within a few weeks, I was on a call. It was an organizing call for doing some Latinx outreach. We were targeting specific cities to kind of check in with folks and see where they're at, and which is an important part, I think, in just moving us forward. I recently read Teal Bernie, I Would Recommend It, by Chuck Rocha, who talked about how that engagement looked. And of course, the work by Stacey Abrams with voter outreach and registration, all that stuff. These are important kind of landmarks there for moving voter rights forward and making sure that voices are heard in our democracy, because that's what we need to be working on. You know, the arc of justice requires an arc of work. And I think that like plugging into these things is important. So I was on this call, and during the call, one of the young men spoke up and said, you know, we spent all this time electing Joe Biden. Like we worked and we voted and we did this and we did that. How come he's not doing anything? And now this was in December, okay, like early December. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Are you serious? I'm like, you know what, Joe, you're going to start your job next week and I'm going to fire you now because you haven't done anything. Are you kidding me? And like, but this is the narrative that you expect to come out. And it's like, you know, it was just beyond me that people were actually speaking in that way because of the lack of knowledge about how this process works. And, you know, and this is before we even knew whether we even had a possibility of having some kind of control over the Senate. Right.
Right.
So like there was just no, and so this just tells us that we have so much more work to do. And one of the things I want to talk about today, if we have time, is maybe there's been so many executive orders that have happened. But relatively, it's not really that many. I mean, most of the ones, especially on day one, there were 17 executive orders. And I want to say like 14 of them were just undoing bad things. And so it was just
Biden undoing Trump. Basically.
Yeah, exactly. And like something simple like joining the World Health Organization, like rejoining them during a pandemic. That just seems to me to be pretty much a no-brainer. Like the virus doesn't care what country you're in, right? You know, and we have a habit of like looking at the UK, you know, mutation, or the South African mutation, or the Brazil mutation, the California one. But it's like the virus doesn't care about that stuff. And it is in our best interest to make sure that we, you know, get rid of this virus, do whatever we can to protect ourselves, and we don't live in a bubble. The world is not a bubble. Like we need to work together to defeat this thing, or it's going to defeat us. And in, so far, we've done a great job of doing that to ourselves. But I would like to, like, you know, one of the things I wanted to say, you know, like on day one was, hey, Joe, whoever, and his name wasn't Joe, but Joe, look at this. Here's 17 things he did right on the very first day. And what do you think about these things? And I had another discussion too, which is interesting, talking about the framing of the moderate Democrats, and is Biden a moderate Democrat? I think anyone who gets into those discussions just really wants to divide. Like, yes. Like, what's the motive behind that stuff? Let's look at what he's actually doing. And do you consider like requiring on a federal level that everyone wear masks? Is that moderate? Is that like progressive? Like where he can, like on federal lands or in federal buildings or federal employees and contractors, requiring a mask be worn. This seems like a pretty basic, simple thing to do during a pandemic. But will you describe that as progressive or is that the standard? Like, and if you wanna call it the status quo Democrat, I'm fine with that. Like, I think that's great. You know, if that's what you want to call, if that's how you want to label it. Is rejoining the World Health Organization considered a radical things.
Are these like questions that other Democrats are posing or Republicans are posing about Democrats?
I just want to say that I don't know how you can talk about a politician being progressive or non-progressive without actually looking at what they're doing. And is that progressive or not?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So
what does that mean? And I think when it all boils down, I think we'll see that what's the most important thing is actually like not how we're talking about them, but what they're actually doing.
Right. Are you walking the walk? Joe Biden, to me right now, seems, in terms of what he says he's going to do, as being left to center, left of center, not moderate.
Yeah.
At least.
I don't even like talking about moderates and centers. I think that's just like a fantasy way of us trying to like wrap our heads around it. Because when it comes down to policy, I don't know, either you join the World Health Organization or you don't. What is the middle of that? Like so many of these things are false choices and no middles. And so I wonder what that is. It a list of like doing half of that policy? Does that make you more moderate? And so I think it's and when you look at the electorate, I kind of feel the same way. I think there are, you know, there's your base and your advocates and there's your opposition and, you know, they have advocates and their base as well. And then everything else is persuadable. And who's going to persuade them? Like, instead of thinking that it actually relates to policy, it really relates to like the overall platform. If you have one, now let us remember, the Republican Party had no platform last year under its fearless leader. But, you know, like it's a combination of things and where we can come together, when we can work together and improve and move forward when it comes to our democratic rights and our human rights and all the shared values that we have. You know, we all want a world where we can be healthy. You know, that seems like a shared value. Like who's really moving that agenda forward? I think joining the World Health Organization might be a step in that direction, and requiring masks be worn, you know, according to scientists, you know, that probably is a good thing. And actually it's reflected in our latest numbers too.
Well, yeah. But again, you go down to the crazy people that think wearing a mask is the devil's work or, you know, it's a suppression of your freedom. That's not rational thinking. And that should be excised from the conversation, or at least, you know, why are you thinking that way? You could ask that question. But it seems you're not going to get a clear response. It's just going to be, you know, I've seen that. What's that guy's name? He might be on the show, actually. Jordan Kleppner. I should say his name right if I want him on the show. He works for Comedy Central, The Daily Show, and he goes around to Trump rallies and he asks people.
Oh yes,
you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, very entertaining, very entertaining.
And their reasoning is so narrow and circular. They really make no sense.
Well, I don't know. For people who say like that it doesn't work or it can't be done, you know, they're kind of like two sides of the same coin. You know, it's like I believe in, I think it's an old Chinese proverb that those people who say it can't be done should never stand in the way of those people doing it.
Right. Right.
And I think that, and so when looking at doing it, like the first executive order was the wearing of masks. The second one was which was undoing Trump's, you know, exit from the World Health Organization, was to rejoin the health organization. And instead of like being aloof, his third executive order was actually setting up a COVID office that reports directly to Biden. So he's like bottom lining this stuff. He is deeply involved, and that reverses Trump's order. That was executive order number three. Number four, which I think was incredible, was extending the foreclosure and the eviction moratoriums because so many people were in jeopardy and actually had lost their homes. They were being evicted during a pandemic. You know, my favorite fortune cookie, I know I've shared this with you before, is to do not compulsively make things worse. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite fortune cookie of all time. My friend Jennifer, she has it hanging up on her wall. She framed it, which is really kind of fun. I love that fortune cookie. The key word is compulsive because we can't seem to help ourselves. Well, this is exactly the opposite. Like during a pandemic, is it a good idea for people to be losing their homes because they've lost their jobs?
Right.
Like, not a good thing.
And their health care on top of it, too.
Yeah, their health care and all that. Let's just, you know, let's just completely, why is there unrest in the United States? I don't know. You know, like, how can we make the pandemic worse? So he actually took a step here. Joe Biden did with executive order number 4. Let's extend this moratorium. Let's give them a little bit more time to pay the rent, right? Or the, you know, let's see what we can do. And you know, I think that makes sense. And the same thing with the freeze on student loan debt.
Yeah.
So I have a thing about student loan debt, like big time. If we can afford to like extend loans to large corporations at like zero interest or next to nothing, why the hell are we putting this burden on our children or people who are going to school to try and improve themselves and actually add more to our economy? Let's bury them in debt so they never get to do anything and they have to go home after they earn their degree and live with their parents because they can't afford to be out on their own because of this crushing student debt.
Right.
I think we ought to walk our talk there. And at least someone, Joe Biden, had the sense of let's at least put a freeze on the debt. Like, let's not compulsively make the pandemic worse. Let's not put an additional burden on students who have crushing student loan debt, you know, and let's freeze some of that going on there.
I love it. I love that.
Yeah. Doesn't this sound great? And so, but people don't know that this has already happened on day one. And I'm only up to number 5. There's 17 of these things, right? It was so easy because it was lined up. You know, we all have begun to come to terms with the fact that our climate is, you know, something that we can actually have an impact on that is actually not in a good place right now when you actually talk to scientists and people who know this stuff. And so, you know, Trump was kind of like, well, we don't really need this. We should America first. Let's pull out of the Paris Climate Accords, which almost every single nation on this planet is a part of and is a commitment to the idea of battling climate change, right?
Right.
So on day one, guess what? We're back in. We have an opportunity to show leadership here. And in the process, maybe create some wonderful, great, clean, green jobs.
Right.
I'm so tired of people telling us we can't do something and giving us the false choice of you can either breathe or be unemployed. That's
right.
Bullshit. And the only reason that's being said is because the people saying it, the handful of politicians and the large corporations who support them are doing it to divide us on this choice between breathing and having a job. And while they're doing that, while they're dividing us, they have their hands in our pockets making all the profits from a dirty economy. I'm tired of that kind of narrative. It doesn't apply. And I'm so glad that we have rejoined the Paris Climate Accords.
You're pumped. I love it.
Well, seriously. I mean, you can just go down the list. So that was number 6, right? And I probably shouldn't. I mean, we don't have enough time to go into them. But, I mean, there's other things here, too. Like the whole idea of, you know, stopping, you know, and this is related to the environment as well. The Keystone, you know, XL pipeline and canceling what Trump had done around that and revoking that permit. There was the 1776 commission. This is executive order number 8, which basically created this commission that was in charge of making sure that that the curriculum in U.S. schools was actually conservative history. So we want to make sure that we have conservative history, and that is what is taught in our schools.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, the report that they put out on MLK Day of all days, like, contained so many inaccuracies and policies that were just paragraphs that were just lifted from actual published works. Like there was, I don't even know where to begin with this. Like, let's indoctrinate. I'm not even saying the word right. I'm like apoplectic, I guess. The conservative worldview as the view of history when teaching our children. That was what this group was set up to do.
Scary stuff.
Yeah, and it was supposed to like I don't know. There was they did a deep dive on any kind of form of like race or sex stereotyping,
right.
And you know, like, it was nasty. So that's gone. Good, thank goodness that's gone. Unwinding of Trump's changes to the census, you know, all the things there, like, do you think it might be a good idea to actually count the number of people that are using the roads and using the bridges and that need an education, that like need healthcare in a region, regardless of whether they're a citizen or not, because that's strain on our infrastructure? Like, maybe we should actually count everyone?
No, they want to starve the beast. You don't have the numbers, then you can't. It's harder to justify spending the money. So, you know.
Yeah, let's create the downward spiral of our economy and our infrastructure by just not counting anyone, and let's starve it from funding, and then point to government as the problem for not funding it. And who does that serve? So it always comes back to who is doing this, like who is proposing this, why are they proposing it, like to divide us once again, and because they make money doing it.
And
right?
I think it's largely they make money doing it, but I also think there are just some weird obsessive mentalities, like a Grover Norquist, who just believes, you know, without much thought, that you shouldn't have taxes.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
You know, and there's no, and they'll do anything to make sure politicians try to limit the amount of taxation on society. And you cannot have a functioning society without money coming from the people to fund important infrastructure projects and institutions. But some of these people, they're like obsessives. You know, they have this obsessive need to have this very myopic mission fulfilled. It's not rational, again.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think part of that, you know, from what I can see, is that I think a lot of it is based in a scarcity mentality, that there's only so much to go around. And I've been left behind. You have forgotten about me. Government has failed me, and I'm not getting what I deserve. Like, because I'm the privileged white person in the room, I'm not getting what I deserve because there's a them. There's another person. There's the black and brown person over there who doesn't deserve any of this, who is not a hard worker. It's that whole narrative that I can't have because there's a them, and they're the ones that are standing in the way of me and what I deserve out of this country. And it shows its head in so many different ways. You know, I hear it all the time here in Pennsylvania. I don't want my tax dollars going to Philadelphia schools. Like, what are they actually saying? Are they talking about the little white boys and girls who are going to school in Philadelphia? I think not, right?
Right.
Like, that's not what we're talking about. And it becomes, like, so hidden and beneath the skin that so much of this is driven by our division of race. And if this year has taught us anything, is that, like, hiding that on some kind of, like economic populism program. Like, well, if we just talked about jobs, and if we just talked about, you know, like, we're missing the boat, because if we all have jobs, we'll all do well. And just let's ignore race is not the answer to this. Like, so much of this is wrapped around it. And so when you look at something like the census, that's wrapped in racism. Or you look at the next one, the executive order number 10, which was to strengthen the legal protection behind the Dreamers. Remember them?
Yeah.
The deferred action DACA. For DACA, right? Right? All of that. So that's what he undid. He undid all of that, too. Another example of racism. And the next one, number 11, abolishing the Muslim ban. Well, you know, like, so much of this is rooted in that. When you actually look at it, it just pours right out of it.
It's based on prejudice, and it's based on classism.
Yeah, and religious things, and xenophobia, and, you know, homophobia. I mean, because there's some around that. I mean, it's just it's all this fear, and somehow being left out or left behind, and which is like reeks of privilege to me.
And so, you know, I don't, to me, that I'm going to say two things. That is America, but I don't want it to be America. You know, that does exist in America, that mentality. I mean, 70 plus million people backed that guy up. He lost, thankfully, because about 80 million said no. But that is America. That prejudice, that classist mentality, that xenophobia, that homophobia.
You know, I had a conversation with my my previous business partner for a business I was in, and he was like, boy, things are crazy. He was talking about the January 6th attempt to take over our country, January 6th. And he was saying, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe this is happening in America. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, you don't really understand America right now. Like, how can you, like, this is what I've been working on. This is what so many of us have been working on for years. This was not something that was unexpected by any way. And if it was unexpected to you, you haven't been paying attention. You have not been paying attention in any way, shape, or form. Hold up the mirror. This is the United States of America, and you're seeing it in real time during a pandemic and with everything that's happening politically in our country. Yes, we are racist. Right there shows it. Yes, we do believe in conspiracies. Yes, like we lack some of the basic education that's necessary to keep a democracy healthy. Like, absolutely. And it plays out. And I think things like budgets and executive orders show us where our priorities really are. And that's what has me so excited about these 17 executive orders on day one, because this is showing in a real way what the priorities are in this administration. Now, with all of these, there's also the call that Biden has made to the Congress to say, we need laws around these things. Like, the only reason there's executive orders around these things is because these things aren't the law right now. Right. And they need to be. And this needs to be something that's pushed for. But in the meantime, I'm going to show you where my priorities are. I'm going to address these things and get us going in the right direction.
I love it. I love it. We're talking to Dwayne, or with, I shouldn't say to, talking with Dwayne Heisler, our resident politico here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. And we're getting toward the end of another conversation, Dwayne. So
it goes so fast. How does it go so fast?
There's so much to talk about, and you have great energy. That's why.
Well, what I'd like to do maybe is just kind of rip through what else happened here, just so people have a good picture of what happened on day one with those 17. But I would certainly be amiss if I didn't mention something about healthcare in this moment, and you know, working with SEIU Healthcare PA. And because it really ties to the very first amendment, you know, our first executive order that was there. So just to kind of roll down the list. So order number 12 was about basically canceling, once again, undoing the Trump administration's interior enforcement, administration's interior enforcement. And this had to do with detaining and deporting people at the border. And there was also the halt to the construction of the wall that Mexico was going to pay for. Remember that, number 13. 14th was deporting protections for Liberians. We were singling out in certain, you know, countries, banning workplace discrimination against LGBT employees, you know, putting them back under the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So there was that. There was an ethics pledge in all branches of the executive executive branch officials. Isn't that remarkable? And by the way, that wasn't something that the Trump, it's kind of undoing the Trump administration, but there wasn't an executive order for them to act unethically. They just did it. So this is actually like the opposite, which I find kind of funny. Maybe it really isn't funny. So, and then unfreezing any of the other bad stuff, because when Trump was leaving the place, he was trying to burn it down too. And there were all these midnight regulations, and he just says, you know, a freeze on everything else, you know, like, and then, and some of those he's addressed like in the upcoming, you know, with the, cause we're over 30 of them right now, but that's what he did. So all of those people who were concerned about whether Biden was going to do anything or not, I think you can just start with day one and then maybe go to day two and day three and actually look it up, because it's there. And he's leading the agenda on that. So very, very pleased with that initial jump start on those things. Yeah,
I love it. I'm really happy that you gave us a little perspective and focus about where we're going with a native son. You know, we both of us have connections to northeastern Pennsylvania. This show has aired all over the world, but let's hold up the fact that President Biden is from our neck of the woods. He's learned a bit of what he's thinking from his time as a working class kid in northeastern Pennsylvania, and I'm proud to say it.
Yeah, so when he was still in the primary, and I think I told you about this before, maybe it was on another episode, I actually had the opportunity to pick him up at the airport. I was his driver.
Great.
And got to meet him, go drive out on a tarmac. You don't often get to do that. And then later on, I took him to a function where he was, because it was during the primary, where he was meeting with some Democratic officials for the primary and things like that. Took him to that event. And then on the drive home, got to talk with him about what was happening with healthcare workers up in Scranton. And we were really concerned about the health of that hospital. And the very next day, he did a video and he issued a tweet and made a statement about supporting the workers, the frontline workers at Scranton, at Regional Hospital in Scranton, which really helped us to set the agenda for making sure we have quality healthcare in out of that facility, and Moses Taylor as well, in the city of Scranton. And he actually gave me a tray of chocolate chip cookies as we were getting out of there. It was a rainy day, and he hands me these, and he goes, you know what? These are just going to sit here. Take these, Dwayne. And so it was a really weird thing. I was holding the keys to his car. I had a tray of chocolate chip cookies in the rain. He didn't make a commitment to me at that point that he was going to do the video or make the call for action for the workers. And I was like, what the hell just happened? Like, should I throw these keys in the river? And then I ate a chocolate chip cookie. I'm like, damn, he's right. These are really good. And I got a flat tire on the way home, and I lost my SEIU pin. It was a weird day. But the next day, it was all good because he actually did something. And so he's someone who gets things done and who does things. And so there's that little story, I guess, there.
Excellent story. I love it.
Yeah, it was funny. So I actually got chocolate chip cookies from President Biden. Amazing. But the real story there is how he stood up for the workers and for the city of Scranton and for the idea of raising health care in our community.
Well said. Dwayne Heisler, it's always a pleasure to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. Keep doing the great work you're doing, and I look forward to talking with you in a couple of months.
Sounds like a plan. Stay safe.
Guess we're leaving town again. We're moving out and moving in. Gotta break the news to all my friends, but they won't care. They'll just find another face to fall behind, take my place, and run way past second base and just stand there. A dream sickle on a summer night in a folding lawn chair. Witches ring around the moon, better get home soon. Poison oak and poison ivy, dirty jokes blew right by me. Mama curling up beside me, crying to herself. Why can't daddy just come home, forget whatever he did wrong? He's in a hotel all alone, and we sickle on a summer night in a folding lawn chair. I'm still packing up my room, gotta get home soon. New sneakers on the high school court, and you swore you'd be. I'll be 18 4 years from now, with different friends in a different town. I'll finally be free. Call you both some holiday, tell you why I moved away. Say everything's gonna be okay, then come see me. A dreamsicle on a summer night in a forest.
lightning in the evening sky and my mama's red hair. Hearts breaking through the springtime, breaking into June. Breaking into June. Breaking into June.
And now some actual statistics from Harper's Magazine. It's Harper's Index from the September 2020 edition. Again, these are actual statistics. Minimum amount the U.S. government spent funding anti-Hugo Chavez rock songs while he led Venezuela, $22,970. Rank of 2019 among years with the highest worldwide spending on nuclear weapons. 1. Percentage by which the United States spent more than the second highest spender. 70% more. Number of National Guard members on active duty in the United States on June 1, 2020. 66,700. On active duty abroad on the same day, 28,300. Minimum number of cities in which the Department of Homeland Security has used aerial surveillance at protests this past year, 15 cities. Minimum hours of surveillance footage that it has logged, 270 hours at minimum. Number of police departments in the 20 largest U.S. cities whose use of force policies meet UN human rights standards. None of them. Zero. Total value of surplus military equipment distributed to U.S. police departments under the Trump administration. $964,962,803. Of extreme cold weather parkas distributed to the LAPD, $27,161. Minimum number of police killings since 2010, in which restrained victims told officers they couldn't breathe, 32. Number of those incidents that resulted in criminal charges against the officers, 5. Number of those cases in which charges were not eventually dropped, 2. Percentage of time on duty that U.S. police officers devote to violent crime, 4%. To non-criminal complaints, 35%. Actual statistics. How about those? We'll be right back.
gonna hold me back. Nothing's ever gonna hold me back. Through the mirror, seeing clearer, taking back the power. And I hear the sound of whispers all around me. They can't drown me out. No, 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 no. Unchained and my heart is free. I'm still the man I was born to be. Fighting, rising from the ashes, and I'm standing there no matter what comes at me. I'm gonna break these chains. I will remain unchained, and my heart is free. I'm still the man I was born to be. Oh, nothing's ever gonna hold me.
Goddess. While he speaks benevolence, she seeks something more than happenstance. And the glory of goodness inspires that goddess into a love-lorn lullaby, watching him again try to touch earnestly the clouds in a light blue moving sky.
In my wildest dreams, oh, I never have seen such a sky. I'm leaving today for the gardens of Spain. Gonna find my home far away. One more walk in the shade, my old stomping ground. Shadows purple and gray falling on the Empire State. Streams of people and light lights flash as the cars roll past. I'll be fine. Softly coming down, will I see you again someday in the Empire State?
Episode 406 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Dwayne Heisler, Harper's Magazine, and these musical artists: Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, The Black Pumas, The New York Dolls, Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, Antonio Vivaldi, Devon Gilfillian, Grant Lee Phillips, and Josh Rouse, as well as Brentford Marsalis and Terrence Blanchard too. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.